CoOptimus.com presents the CoOptiCast.
Hello, and welcome back to another shiny episode of the CoOptiCast. This is episode 33 for Sunday, December 13th, 2009. I'm Mike, and my tryptophan drugged cohort over there is Nick. And I've had a really great weekend. How about you?
Yeah, I've had a pretty good weekend, I guess you can say.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Spend it on the couch.
Yeah, there's a lot of couch stuff going on. We had some pretty crappy weather today, so it was a good excuse to stay inside.
I know the weather was crappy because I was actually up in your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
In your state. Yeah. Cold and rainy.
Yeah, it started out icy this morning, actually, up here. And
yeah.
Of course, that meant I had to go to the grocery store. So.
Of course.
It's over, and we're 1 week closer to the holidays and more time off.
Yeah, you know, I don't get too much time off, but it was nice to get away for the weekend. So before I left, I played a lot of stuff. Let's see. I played some Pixel Junk Shooter, which is completely fantastic. It reminds me a lot of... do you remember the game Solar Jetman on the NES?
No, I don't.
No, okay. Well, boo on you, but that's kind of what it reminds me of.
I probably played it, but I just didn't know the name.
Yeah, it's an interesting take on the twin stick shooter formula mixed with some more old school type gameplay elements and physics and fluid dynamics and all kinds of interesting things. You can you're on a rescue mission to pick up all these people trapped inside these caves, and there are like gases that will, you know, explode if fire gets near them, and there's lava pits and water pits, and if water touches lava, it turns into rock and you can shoot the rock, and the levels kind of present themselves in a puzzle-like nature, and you go through and you rescue your dudes and you rock out to the cool soundtrack.
Yeah, I played a bunch of it today, and the soundtrack is really awesome. I can't remember who they got to do it for them, but I was really enjoying it.
Yeah, they get a different person to do it every time, so it's with that Pixel Junk series, it's always interesting to see what their music's going to be like, because like, if you played Eden, it was pretty much like, I'm going to drop some shrooms and veg the F out and listen to this.
Yeah.
And this is... I don't even know how to describe it, but it's awesome.
It's like trance, like light trance kind of music. You know?
Yeah, but there's some like epic space opera type swells and sci-fi sounds. It's interesting.
The game makes me desperately want someone to remake Chopper Lifter. Choplifter?
Yeah.
Like There's No Tomorrow. I'm like, oh man, we need a nice 3D remake of that. It'd be great.
Yeah. I mean, they make a lot of those for like the iPhone and stuff because it's pretty easy to do.
Yeah.
Let's see. I also checked out Pixel Junk Monsters Deluxe for the PSP because, well, I was in a Pixel Junk mood and I was away for the weekend, so I figured I'd need something on the go. And that game... It's pretty fun for a tower defense game, and it's got so many features that take advantage of the PSP. It's kind of scary. Like, you know, you can have ad hoc or infrastructure co-op. You can maintain a friends list and search for games in server lists online. It's pretty complete.
That's nice.
And when you look at a lot of the other PSP stuff out there, it's hard to compare, really.
Yeah, I've heard
so
good things.
I like that. Yeah, I think you should definitely check it out. It's well worth the asking price, especially if you have any love for the tower defense games. I've really only been using my PlayStation because I checked out the PS3 version of Critter Crunch, which is awesome and adorable. I also checked out Revenge of the Wounded Dragons, which reminded me a lot of the Legend of Han, or
yeah,
what was the Han Tao game? I can't remember the
Invincible
the first part of it.
Invincible Tiger.
Yeah, that's it. Invincible Tiger. It was like that, but more arcadey and in the vein of, I hate to say NES Kung Fu, but that's what it felt like to me. Which isn't to say a bad thing, but it's very simple. And I have also checked out Phantasy Star Zero and The Legend of Zelda Spirit Tracks on the DS. And Spirit Tracks is really great, and if you like Zelda, you should check it out. Phantasy Star Zero, it's cool, but I really think you need analog stick for the way they designed that game.
Yeah, like you, I've been playing that as well, and the targeting on the guys is really difficult for me. Like, I feel like the camera's constantly having to swing around, and I'm constantly getting like crowded and stuff.
Well, the thing is, the button to lock onto a target is the same button that swings the camera around.
Yeah.
So you might try to lock onto a guy and end up flipping the camera and making it so you can't even see him anymore. Yeah. And since he uses the D-pad, you only have 8-way directional control, and it auto-targets items on the ground. So I'll be like, hey, I want to pick up this rad sword, but every time I get close to it, the auto-target triggers, and I swing my weapon. And that was actually really annoying. So Hopefully it gets a little bit better. We still have yet to try it out in co-op, which is going to be what the real meat of it is.
Yeah, hopefully this week.
Yeah, but that's what I've been playing. How about you?
Yeah, so like I just said, played Phantasy Star Zero and Pixel Junk Shooter. Also, touched a little bit of Dragon Age, not as much as I had hoped. I got stuck at the one part where the undead kind of attack in that one town. I must have tried it a couple times, so got frustrated with that. Most of my gaming time has been with Assassin's Creed 2. In fact, I just checked Raptor to see how many hours I put into the game, because I've been logging a lot, and I was up to like 18 hours.
And I put 20 over 22 in it when I beat it.
Yeah, so I did finally complete it last night.
So what do you think about that ending?
It was interesting, you know. Tough to talk about it without giving away any spoilers, for sure.
And that's all we can say.
But it definitely took a sci-fi / biblical-ish turn, I guess. Or
it's like Xenogears. You can say that.
See, I've never played those games, so
it's very religious and very sci-fi.
It almost reminds me of like some of the theories behind Lost, like a couple seasons ago, where like some people were going kind of all crazy and deep, and like everything has like a meaning behind a meaning kind of a thing.
Right.
So it was cool though, and there's definitely a couple of moments in that last cutscene there where it gives you almost like the chills when I don't want to say too much to spoil it, but you're like, oh wow, okay, this just got really cool. So
yeah, it just got real. Yeah. One thing I really appreciated about it is, while you're sitting there letting, you know, the gravitas of the ending sink in, the credits start rolling, but you still have control of your character.
It's a trick that they pulled
that trick in the last Prince of Persia game as well, which I thought was pretty neat. Did you solve all of the glyphs?
I did not. I have to go back. I need like 6 or 7 more of them, and I need the feathers. So
yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to go through and do it right now. I think I need to take a break from the game. I was getting a little frustrated towards the end with the game where the contextual controls weren't doing what I wanted with some of like the jumping puzzles and stuff. Especially getting to get Altair's armor and stuff. Some of the timed tombs were pissing me off, because the guy was like jumping off in one direction when I totally didn't want him to go that way and things like that. So
yeah, I had a few problems with things like that, and there are a few wonderful bugs. I can actually tell you offline how to trigger a pretty fantastic one. But I can recommend to you to finish off doing the glyph stuff before you put the game down, because the thing it unlocks directly ties to the revelation of the ending.
Okay.
And it's much more effective if you see it.
All right, I'll definitely have to do that then.
It doesn't take too long, and you can, if the puzzles piss you off, you can always find a walkthrough for them.
The only ones that have that were like really bugging me were some of the circular puzzle ones, specifically mm-hmm. ones that had like pictures in them, because like when you don't highlight the ring, it's like too dark to really even see it match up. But other than that, they've been fine.
Well, the real trick is when you get the ones that have like the code wheel and you have to figure out a number based on the relationship of symbols and numbers and all kinds of you know, wonderful stuff. I don't know if you've gotten those yet, but pretty much all the final ones are.
The only other game I've been playing is Left 4 Dead 2 on the 360. Last weekend I played with Mark and Kat, and we had a pretty good epic session of it going, and we were Left 4 Dead in the in the final map, going across the bridge. Yeah, it was kind of frustrating because we tried and we tried and we tried, and someone had actually joined us during that map, and then they were the only one that survived and actually left, and it was like,
ugh. Actually, I was playing online a little while ago, and I got called in by some of my friends to, you know. Be the ringer for their the bridge mission, because they had been going with three players and the AI was just not cutting the mustard. So I joined in and we died a few times because, you know, some people weren't being able to do everything that was asked of them, let's put it that way, and they weren't necessarily listening to what we were telling them to do. And finally it got to the point at the very end. We were almost to the helicopter, and everyone just went down, and I made a run for it. It's like, see you guys, and we finished it off. And that is definitely really rough. If you don't get a good pace going, you probably won't finish that if you're on any of the harder difficulties.
Yeah, by the eighth or ninth time we went through it, we had it down to like 3 minutes. We could get basically to that the fence to get to the helicopter, and then usually the AI director would just spawn as many special infected as it could to screw us up.
Were you going for the achievement?
We were just all trying to survive.
There's an achievement for getting across the bridge in under 3 minutes, I think.
Oh, really? No, I didn't even realize that. Yeah. We just had it down to a science of exactly where to do and where to go.
Right, right.
So anyway, that's what I've been playing.
That's what you've been playing? How about we talk some news?
News indeed.
Maybe discuss what happened this week in co-op, if you will.
Sounds good.
Anyway, the Spike TV VGAs were over the weekend, and I didn't see them, but apparently some cool stuff got talked about. Apparently Snoop Dogg talked about Dragon Age, which I need to find some footage, because that sounds pretty surreal. What kind of character does he play? What do you think?
I think he'd be the kind of guy to play a hot chick just so he could look at a hot chick the whole time.
Yeah, well, I guess you're right. Anyway, they showed us some footage of a couple games that we've been anticipating heavily. The first footage of Halo Reach was revealed, and man, it looks a lot like Halo. What you think?
Yeah, it does, but you know, it looks it was not as serious, isn't the right word, but it looks different. It looks to have more character to it. You know, all the Spartans that they showed had defining features and stuff. You know, you
had the guy with the
skull.
The skull on his thing. Yeah.
You had the female Spartan that didn't have an arm, like a human arm. She had like a bionic thing there.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. There's a female Spartan that doesn't have an arm, actually. You know, you have your big, bulky kind of Gears of War-ish looking Spartan that had the bigger armor on and stuff. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it looked pretty good.
The real trick to it is I think they've gotten a lot better at lighting, and certainly the character models are a lot more detailed than they have been in the past. But, you know, like the particle effects shown off in it and the lighting, you know, really, you know, helped set the mood. It looked really nice. I mean, you can definitely tell it's a Halo game, and they definitely aren't treading too far away from the look that they've established with the series. But, you know, it looks cool, and a throwaway line in that trailer may have suggested that this is a six-player co-op game.
Yeah, you know,
that's it's raw conjecture, but, you know, you introduce five members of the squad and they all hop in the helicopter and the dude says, is this our sixth? You never know.
Yeah, you know, that was what I kind of took away from it. There's definitely going to be five-player co-op. There has to be, you know, they're really focusing on those five Spartans. If you saw the, they changed the logo now. And actually,
to have five instead of four?
Well, no. Well, I think it always had five. Well, you couldn't really tell because it was just the silhouettes. But now that they filled in the silhouettes with the actual characters.
Right.
So if you go to the Halo Reach site on Bungie's website, they have it as the background now.
And in other trailer news at the VGAs, they showed us some video footage of Crackdown 2. And my nerd senses tingled over the weekend. I figured I felt the presence of Nick getting very excited.
Yeah, I was chuckling to myself watching the trailer for sure.
Like the guy smacking mutants with a what appeared to be a gigantic dumbbell, and lots of explosions, and a lovely slow love ballad type song saying, "Would you like to blow shit up with me?"
Yeah.
You know, it looked like Crackdown.
They captured what was fun with the first Crackdown in that trailer. Just, you know, the chaos. The one thing that a lot of people didn't pick up on is they showed that new gun that lets you, like, attach things to walls. And they had, like, a car attached on both ends between buildings. And they used it like a giant slingshot into a whole group of the mutants. And I was like, oh my god.
It was just... considering how much fun we had the other day with the harpoon gun in the bus,
I
can imagine that that's going to be your new favorite toy.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, it looked great, and I can't wait to play it, especially since, you know, I've been playing Crackdown recently, and I kind of got that bug again, you know, looking for some sandbox mayhem.
Real quick, I know you had missed the VGAs, but look up the trailer for the game called Spec Ops: The Line. They revealed that during the show. They didn't say if it had co-op or not, but the trailer was really interesting. It showed, basically it took place in like a sandy area. Like, it was like, you know, a Middle Eastern war. It was very graphic. Mm-hmm. Like, the character, like, talked about how, like, you know, the stuff he's done is just not acceptable, not forgivable, and things like that.
Not safe for work.
The trailer, yeah, probably not. But anyway,
okay.
The interesting thing with it is the ground, like, shifts underneath you. So, like, the one part he's fighting and the sand collapses into a building below him and he, like, slides down into it. And it's all kind of, like, seamless in that sense. So the whole environment shifts because I guess there's, like, this big sandstorm that just buried the city or something.
Well, Uncharted 2 certainly showed us the awesome effect of a dynamically changing level, so
yeah.
I'm sure that a lot more games coming out are going to start pulling elements like that in. Let's see. The next Borderlands DLC got announced, and it is called Mad Moxie's Underdome Riot, and that's just a great name, I gotta say.
I love those Gearbox guys.
Yeah, I guess what we're getting is something like a Horde mode style DLC for Borderlands, except it sounds a lot more to me like Firefight, because they talk about, you know, Moxie, you know, is running this tournament and causing all kinds of crazy stuff to happen, and I guess she'll call like different rules and it'll affect like your health is being drained or something like that.
Yeah.
So it reminded me a lot of, you know, when they turn on like the Blackout Skull or Tough Luck in Firefight. And those definitely make the game a lot more interesting because they can, you know, come up with whatever combos that they want.
They said that there's even like some of the challenges in it can take like, it's like a 6-hour marathon session.
Jeez.
It's like, oh my god. I mean, our 3-hour marathon session of Firefight was like probably the upper limits of my attention for something like that. But 6 hours? Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. The money quote out of it was something that Randy Pitchford sent around after the press release. And once again, I felt Nick, you know, get excited. He says he's talking about it's a new game mode, comparing it to Firefight or Horde, and then he said words that will probably linger in your dreams, Nick. It's like Smash TV in a co-op first-person shooter, but in Borderlands.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Yeah, I know you like that. I could, like I said, the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I'm like, Nick is excited about this.
Randy's definitely getting a Christmas card from Co-Optimus.
Surprise! There's another Call of Duty on the way. Surprise! They're leaving Modern Warfare 2 Infinity Ward, and Treyarch is going to... they posted it. They're going to take responsibility for it, and they are looking for a level designer. And they said that they need to research subject matter for history and the look of the level. And we can safely assume that it will take place in a war that took place in the past. I'm not sure it'll be World War II, but it's certainly not going to be modern day.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all I got to say about that.
You know my hopes.
Yeah, hopefully Treyarch will show Infinity Ward what a good co-op mode will do in your campaign.
Yeah.
Just saying. I don't like their games as much, but I certainly appreciate what they do for co-op. And that is all I've got to say about that. Really. For real this time. And the last big story we got this week is that the Games for Windows Live service on PC... Or is it just Live? Or yes, it's just Live. They're going to provide games on demand, which is cool. Games on demand are great. You know, things like Steam and, you know, downloadable titles on PSN, Xbox Live have, you know, really kind of made us spoiled for getting things that we want right away. And they're going to launch a Games for Windows service that does the same thing. But so Nick, how many games are there on Steam currently?
It was over 2,000.
2,000?
Yeah.
How many on Direct Drive?
It was over 1,000. Like 1,000, yeah.
Impulse, probably hundreds.
Yeah, a couple hundred.
At this point. Yeah, you want to take a guess as how many games are on this Games for Windows Live service at launch?
Oh, I know. It's like 5.
Yeah, 5. They're launching a digital distribution service with 5 games.
And 2 of those are arcade games, basically.
Yeah. The World of Goo is supposed to be really fun. I don't know. I applaud their effort, but I really think that they should have expanded this to stuff that was not just the Live-enabled titles. Because not every PC game has the Games for Windows branding on it these days, but, you know, there are a lot.
Exactly.
You got things like that, you know, Witcher, Company of Heroes, things like that. Dawn of War 2. They all have that branding. Why aren't they on this list?
It's just silly.
It's a great effort. I hope it takes off, because the more ways that we have to get things digitally, the better. Personally, I like sticking with Steam, but some people don't like Valve. Some people don't like Stardock for some reason. Maybe some people are loyal to Microsoft. I don't know. But 5 games? Really? But we'll round this out on a not-so-negative note. We only have one quick story this week. But once again, at the VGAs, they apparently announced that there will be a Green Day-focused Rock Band game. A dumping ground for all the crappy pop punk that I started hating in high school. But, you know, Green Day is pretty fun to listen to, so it'll be cool. And it'll be really interesting because Green Day is a 3-piece band. And these Rock Band games traditionally have 4 players. And I know they'll split off the vocalist as their own player, but... That'll be kind of a weird disconnect if you're playing, you know, with 4 people on the career and there's only 3 people
on
the band.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought about that. Wouldn't that be kind of off-putting?
Yeah.
Ah, I don't know. But, you know, 14-year-old girls can swoon over Billy Joe. And, you know, he can pretend that he's not almost 40. Anyway, we're going to take a little break here, and when we come back, we are going to announce the 2009 Co-Optimus Game of the Year Awards. Stay tuned.
This is Clayton from the Immortal Machines PC Gaming Podcast, where every 2 weeks we discuss retro titles, current releases, and engage in stimulating debates about the state of the industry. Come join us anytime at immortalmachines.com and every 2 weeks for our podcast. Immortal Machines, can't die if you keep playing.
Okay, and we're back from our little break, and we're here to tell you what the Co-Optimus staff and community picked as the Games of the Year for 2009. And we're going to start with Game of the Year. You excited, Nick?
I am very excited. Can't you tell?
Yeah, that, like I said, back of my neck, there's hairs standing up. There's electricity in the air. Feeling a little anxious, like I got to run a marathon.
We got time. You can go. Go ahead.
We can. Yeah, I'll see you in 5 hours.
Okay.
All right. Well, the Co-Optimus staff's choice for the Game of the Year for Co-Optimus.com is Halo 3 ODST, with a runner-up, a close runner-up, mind you, of Dawn of War 2. And that might surprise the community who picked Borderlands, which was not a surprise to us. So, Nick, you want to talk about the competition out there?
Yeah, so... First, I'll quickly explain how the awards work this year. What we did is, as a staff, we nominated a bunch of games in each category, and then we went through and did our votes, and then we also put out threads on the forums for our community to vote on as well. So when the votes were tallied for Game of the Year, there was actually a tie, and the tie was between ODST and Dawn of War 2. And so we had to make a decision and figure out. One, there's only one Game of the Year. It's not Games of the Year. That doesn't make sense. So
right,
we looked at the community pick, which was Runaway Borderlands. I think it got like 50% of the vote.
Right.
but following up to that, we had ODST had a pretty faithful showing, and sadly, I don't even remember how many votes Dawn of War 2 got, but it wasn't many at all. Which doesn't surprise us. We have a very console-centric community. Though we do have a lot of PC stuff on the site, they don't seem to interact with everybody. I want to look here real quick while we got this up for see what Dawn of War 2 ended up with. Yeah, Dawn of War 2 had one vote. So.
And I'm pretty sure that was Jackal.
Probably.
Or maybe not. I'm just taking a guess. He is our biggest PC proponent as far as the community goes.
As for ODST, I think it's well deserving. You know, I picked Borderlands for me just because it was kind of like a throwback title. It was a refreshing title in the sense that it didn't require too much thinking. But like you said, ODST I think is a worthy pick because one, it doesn't just have its co-op campaign with four players and split screen with online and things like that. It does have firefight, and firefight's definitely some of the most fun I had this year in co-op gaming. It's something that would it come out in September? Like, it still feels fresh firing it up and playing through a firefight map and stuff. Dawn of War 2, you know, it came out in February actually, so it's probably not as fresh in people's minds. Mm-hmm. What that did for, you know, the RTS / RPG game on PC and co-op was pretty amazing. And I know both me and you had a lot of fun running through that.
It also had The Last Stand. And part of my reasoning for choosing it was, out of all the games I played this year, my top three as far as co-op awesome fun were Dawn of War, followed by 50 Cent and ODST. And when it came time to put my vote in, I had to look and see what do these games offer beyond a campaign. And as much as I liked a game like Borderlands or a game like 50 Cent, they have one co-op mode. They have the campaign. You do it in co-op. You can play it solo, you can play in co-op, whatever. Dawn of War 2 and ODST had a more complete package in my eyes. You know, ODST had the campaign, and Halo has very well at this point established that it is a great co-op experience in the campaign. And Firefight is, you know, a fantastic co-op mode. And, you know, it gave me the opportunity to play the game in several ways, all in co-op. And to me, that makes a better overall choice. And that's, you know, that's my reasoning. And we've talked about the game of the year enough.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we definitely have to give the honorable mention to 50 Cent, though.
As a probably... Oh, yeah. Best co-op game starring 50 Cent goes to 50 Cent, Blood on the Sand. It is great. And you know what? That is a legit category, because 50 Cent was in Modern Warfare 2.
There you go.
See? He had to beat himself out in his own game. So anyway, let's move on to the best non-campaign co-op mode. Staff picked Firefight, and our runner-up was Mercenaries mode in RE5. And the community also went with Firefight. Cool. Yeah. Staff and community, you know, of one mind in this regard. Excuse me?
No, I was just going to say, I think we pretty much covered why we enjoyed that.
Yes, definitely. The most innovative co-op feature, which may or may not have actually been innovative this year, was separate difficulties in Hawks. And someone, after we posted these, kind of said, hey, they did that in Gears 4 too last year.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of odd. But we picked Demon's Souls as a runner-up, and so did the community. So, you know, saved a little face there. Demon's Souls is definitely an intriguing take on co-op, I gotta say.
Yeah, if you don't know what Demon's Souls co-op is, it's not a co-op mode that you can voluntarily play. Like, do you need to co-op in the game if you want to bring your body back after you die? You have to, yes, as a ghost, go invade someone else's game and help them.
You have to fail spectacularly before you're allowed to co-op, which is kind of funny to me. Let's see here. The best casual co-op title. The staff picked the Beatles Rock Band, and with a runner-up of the Ghostbusters for the Wii. And the community went with Beatles Rock Band. No real surprises here. What do you think?
No, not really. It was kind of disappointing, though, when we were trying to come up with nominees for that, really how few casual co-op titles there were. If you look at Mark's column, like the stuff that he writes about, it's generally things that are, you know, that have been out a while or a bit older and stuff. Everyone was like, well, where's New Super Mario Brothers Wii? And
we had trouble with that because that's not really a casual, it is a casual game, but, you know, everyone that's been playing it says this game is really hard. You know, you need an experienced player to drag everyone through it in a co-op mode. And exactly. to me, that does not say casual. Like, you can't just, like a Guitar Hero or a Rock Band, you can drop it down to no fail or easy mode to, you know, play it casually. And it already has the casual appeal because everyone knows the music in it. But, you know, how do you introduce a hardcore 2D platformer to somebody? I mean, yeah, they can do the bubble and let someone carry them through the game, but, you know, that doesn't seem like it's particularly casual to me. And maybe people disagree, and maybe we'll hear about it, but I certainly wouldn't have put it in this category. So, let's go to the best downloadable co-op title. So, excluding, games on demand stuff like, you know, Xbox, you know, the Xbox Originals, the Xbox Live games on demand, and the full retail stuff you might find on Steam or PSN or what have you. So,
yeah,
it's like arcade, PSN, you know, indie games, things like that. The staff chose Trine, and with a special runner-up going to Splosion Man, who, you know,
they got robbed.
We all love Twisted Pixel. And so does the community, because they also picked Splosion Man.
I think Trine... You didn't play Splosion Man?
I didn't play it, but
Oh boy, Mike. Oh jeez.
I didn't play Explosion Man.
Right here, this has been Nick and Mike. Have a good. No.
All right. Okay. See ya. Oh man, Nick. This is, you know, crazy podcast. Oh, you know what? Screw you. I'll play Explosion Man at some point. But you know what? I really like Trine.
I think Trine is.
I really, really liked Trine.
Sets the bar in terms of quality. You know, right from the get go, when you fire that game up, we both were really impressed with not only the graphics, but like the style of the game, the quality of the voice acting.
The handling of the characters, it's just a quality game, and the console version maybe not so quality, but I reviewed the PC version and it was great. You know, the downloadable space has been so great lately. This is the year that gave us Shadow Complex, Explosion Man, Trine, and just the pixel junk games, and it's all like they're all great, and I'm really happy that. Developers took the... Remember when Xbox Live Arcade launched? And it was literally, like, Geometry Wars and then a billion arcade clones. And it was kind of lame. And then people got out of the, okay, we don't need to necessarily go to the Bejeweled mindset. We can actually make a... You know, we can resurrect the shoot-em-up. Or, you know, we can take this idea from Geometry Wars and really, really, you know, think about what we can do with it. And, you know, then they started bringing stuff like Symphony of the Night, you know, back. And generally, you know, bringing more and more high-quality games to it. And now, you know, I forget the title of that, but that there was a game that they just announced.
The Scourge Project.
That, you know, that just looks like a full retail release.
Yeah, it's actually coming out this coming week, actually.
Yeah.
Already on Steam, so.
Yeah, I mean, things like that are just, you know, it just amazes me that what a developer does with a smaller budget. And, you know, no physical distribution these days. So I anticipate that, you know, in the coming years, that this is going to be a very difficult category to vote in, because the number of high-quality titles are going to, you know, match maybe, you know, retail releases. I mean, we'll see. And let's see. We got, you know, a couple kind of negative awards we got to hand out. Our most disappointing co-op game, of which there are many that fell short, and Overlord 2 just absolutely took the cake. That was, I don't know, man. The single player game was great. The co-op game, not so great. And the, you know, bringing a local player in, not doing split screen, and you know maybe they're not as versed in how Overlord works. And it's just, there's just, a game like that is really tough to play in co-op anyway, just because of the complexity, and it didn't work. We didn't get anywhere in the co-op, and, you know, I think, you know, staff agreed. And as a runner-up, surprisingly enough, we also had Lord of the Rings Conquest, and I don't know, I don't think that was necessarily billed as a co-op game. It's definitely like Star Wars Battlefront team shooter type thing, and they tacked a co-op mode onto it, and I'm not really sure what people were expecting, but enough of our staff said that it was ultimately disappointing to them, so there we go. And the community pick, which is something that I if I'd played it, I probably would agree with from what I've heard, was Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2, because, you know, the original Ultimate Alliance was a fantastic co-op game. You know, ton of characters, the four-player co-op, you know, story that doesn't really, you know, mean anything, so you could, you know, do all kinds of continuity shattering combinations, like having Doctor Doom face himself, and, you know, just a great game. And everything I heard about MUA 2 was just, you know, they did not even come within a few inches of the bar set by the original. And now I like to call these the bitch awards, the game that should have had a campaign co-op mode, because really we just complain about great games that needed a campaign co-op mode, and you know, it should have had it. But the number one, the clear winner in my eyes was Torchlight. At, you know, great, fantastic game. It is, you know, one of the finest games ever made in the Diablo mold. And he didn't put co-op in it. It makes no sense. That is why Diablo was awesome. Like, why have all this awesome loot if I can't show it to anyone? Say, look what I've got. You don't have this. Now I'm going to drop my old, unique armor and let you have it. And yeah, it needed co-op. And we had a runner-up of the Ghostbusters game for 360 and PS3. And I'll have to agree that, you know, if you don't put campaign co-op in a game like Ghostbusters,
Ghostbusters.
Really should have probably thought better. Because they're the Ghostbusters. There's four of them. Everybody knows them. They all have their favorite. You want to play as the one you want to play as. Come on. And the community agreed that Ghostbusters needed co-op. So, yeah, that wraps up the co-op, you know, Game of the Year awards. It's been a great year.
Yeah,
it's been a lot of quality co-op.
It was good. There was quite a few games that came out this year. I wanted to look up quickly how many actually did come. I should have done this before the podcast, obviously. I got your numbers now. So there were, and this is this double counts thing. So if Modern Warfare 2 is on three platforms, there's three of them, right? Yeah, so there was 246 co-op releases this year. The Xbox 360 led the way with 44, and the PlayStation 3 had 40. The Wii had 41, surprisingly. So the Wii edged out the PS3 there. PC had 37. So yeah, it was a busy year. Downloadable wise, we saw 26 on the Xbox Live Arcade and 18 on the PlayStation Network. So plenty of co-op games came out this year. Some good stuff there.
Handhelds?
Handheld wise, we had Nintendo DS with 8. And the PSP had 8 as well. So there we go. Pretty close there.
Awesome. So now's the part of the co-op cast when we wind things down and tell you about some upcoming co-op releases. And surprisingly enough, there are some games coming out this late in December. I'm happy. You know, I don't like seeing a week go by with no releases.
Well, this is,
and I don't think
I was gonna say, this is kind of related to what we're talking about. It's all downloadable stuff because, you know what, they don't have to risk the retail stuff to try and get it out there before Christmas, so they have room now here at the end of the year to kind of push out some games.
Yeah, and as a side note, have we ever had a co-opticast where there were no co-op games coming out?
I don't think so.
Since we started listing them? I don't think so. That's the mark of a good year for co-op, I think. In any case, the PC version of The Scourge Project is coming out on the 15th, which is this coming Tuesday. The 360... is this multi-platform? Alien Breed Evolution?
It will be on the PS3 and PC like in the spring, but right now it's the 360 exclusive.
Ah, okay. Ah, so the 360 timed exclusive Alien Breed Evolution is coming out this Wednesday, the 16th. And Matt Hazard, Bloodbath and Beyond, the tired pun that we've seen in everything from the Simpsons to, you know, well, it was on the Simpsons. And it's coming out on the 21st, which is next Monday.
Yeah, I'm curious about
which seems like that seems like a dodgy date.
Yeah, they announced it, so I'm wondering if because of the holiday that week that they're just kind of gonna be releasing stuff early or something. But that would
could
they,
be.
They put that out in like a press release actually, so we'll see.
Yeah. So those are the new releases. Moving on to site content, we added a new feature to the site. Nick, why don't you tell us about the custom feeds?
Yeah, so what we did is we added custom feeds for any game. Basically, any of the game's pages has a little RSS link in the top right corner, and you can subscribe to news about that game. Every game has their own custom feed, though I can't guarantee that there's news on every game. And so it's a good way to keep up to date with your favorite co-op game and when we post news about it.
You know, check out the custom feeds, you know, pick your favorite games, you know, subscribe to news, and it'll be great. We only had one review this past cycle, and that was for a new Super Mario Bros. Wii. And go check it out and see if you agree or disagree with Mark's assessment of it. It seemed to divide the people that had read it already. And we have some great features, as always. And Jason got sent out to the northern wasteland of Montreal, Quebec, Canada, to check out the latest Army of Two 40th Day Community Day. And he interviewed one of the developers, previewed the extraction mode, posted, you know, Q&A with questions from the community, which is great, and got to check out the PSP version. So check them all out. He busted his ass to get all this content to you, and it's all pretty awesome.
Yeah, good job, Jason.
Yeah. There was a casual co-op article for LEGO Star Wars and a co-op classics episode for the generically named Fire Truck.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Really? That sounds like a game a four-year-old would play when you think about it.
Well, it's been in our hot games list for a while now, since we added it to the database. But, I mean, it may very well be the first co-op game. So, we shall see.
Yeah.
1970.
I'm sure someone will come up with something
else. I'd like someone to. 1978 it came out, though. And I actually...
Interesting.
You know, Butler, my buddy Butler, he actually said he used to play it at a local mall around here, that it was there for a while. So,
cool.
Very cool.
So that brings us to the end of another wonderful co-opticast. So you can do us a favor. You should leave us some feedback on iTunes, because we like to, you know, get a good gauge of what people think about us. And, you know, sometimes... You know, people say that we deserve 5 stars.
That's the rumor.
And it makes us happy. That's the rumor. So, you know, give us a user review. You know, talk to us in the forums. Tell us how we're doing. We like hearing about it. And you can follow us on Twitter at CoOptimus with no dash. And for Nick Paleo, I'm Mike Katsifrakis. And we will see you in 2 weeks.
Peace out.